What's up, builders? It's been a minute, but this episode brings it back in a big way. My friends Simon and Julia are co-founders of Bike Connection Agency, a marketing and event firm focused on the cycling market. If you're considering taking your own industry relationships and experience and creating a marketing or event agency, there's a lot to learn here about how to do it, what services to provide, and more. Over the past 6 years, BCA has built up to 4 annual events and servicing a handful of premium marketing clients, which simultaneously sounds like a lot and not that much. And that is one of the most fascinating parts of this interview, how they're balancing work and life by creating a business that meets their needs while still allowing for a massive amount of free time for both of them. At a time when many of us are examining our own work-life balance and reprioritizing personal and professional goals, to hear these two discuss it is incredibly refreshing. The icing on the cake is their relationship. Starting a business with a lifelong friend can be tricky, but they've created a system of open, honest communication and trust that should be a benchmark for any of us. We get a little personal on this, and it's amazing. Let's get started. Hey guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us, Tyler.
My pleasure. So this is actually round two. We've tried this once before, and a lot has happened since then. COVID happened, and now you guys are kind of fully ramped up back to speed for the most part. And we'll talk about why I said for the most part a little bit later on, but let's start with introductions. If you guys want to introduce yourselves so we know whose voice is who.
I'm Julio, and one of the founders of the Bike Connection Agency.
And I'm Simon, and I'm the other founder of Bike Connection Agency.
Awesome. All right, so guys, I want to start with a real basic one. How did you get started? Where did the idea come from? What were kind of the first steps you took to create this new empire?
Well, the word empire sure makes it sound bigger than it really is, but I got to give credit to Julio. He's really been the driving force behind starting Bike Connection Agency. Basically, it all started back in 2017. We both had pretty successful careers in the bike industry in our corporate jobs. But Julio had always, as a conversation point, but kind of as a running joke, was always kind of teasing me with when are we gonna do something together? Like when are we gonna go, on our own way and do something together? And I was always really shy and I was always kind of, sending him off like, nah, no way, like it's not gonna happen. But then it happened. There was a number of circumstances. I was living in the United States at the time, and I wanted to go back and live in Europe, and I couldn't keep doing the job I was doing in the US for RockShox from Europe. And Julio was always very vocal in advocating we're doing something together. So I got back to Europe wanting to figure out what to do, and we just had a really nice lunch, and then he was like, well, so let's do it. Is it time? And I guess it was time to do it. So we started.
Cool. Well, let's talk about the concept for a minute. Like put it in your words, like what is Bike Connection Agency?
Bike Connection Agency is a marketing consultancy agency serving the bicycle industry and those who are interested in cycling. So we're not only servicing the bike industry, we work in a broader sense with any entity that's interested to work with cycling. So that includes like tourist destinations and things like this. So that was the main like kind of mission. But as in all good companies, you need a really strong product. And here again, I got to really credit Julio in saying that he not only came with the idea of, hey, let's do something together. And so this wasn't one kind of thing where, you get an office and company phones and computers and stickers and t-shirts. And then
who does that anymore?
I don't know, but some people do. And, it's not like we're sitting there and then we're like, okay, what do we do now? No, so Julio came into it and he had a really clear idea on what he wanted to do, which was bring to Europe an event format that we both had experience in the US, which used to be called Bike Press Camp. but in a different way, better geared towards the European market and with a stronger emphasis on category-specific events. Basically, what we wanted to do was offer brands the opportunity to do a fully serviced media launch at a fraction of what it would have costed them to do it alone. But we wanted to give them the same level of service. So top-notch location, great riding, photographers, videographers, great meals, great networking opportunities. Just offer it to more brands at the same time.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the big appeal of originally Press Camp. And actually, it's funny because Lance, who is one of the co-founders of Press Camp, was one of my earliest interviews on this podcast. So if you're curious how they did it for the U.S., go back and listen to that one. But yeah, I hadn't thought about that. One of the big differences with yours is whereas the U.S. Press Camp, when it existed, was everybody all at once with, like, I don't know, 25, 30 brands, I think. Like, it was a lot, right? So you had, like, we had to bring a couple of people to cover it for my cycling website, Bike Rumor, because there's just too much for one person to do. Whereas you guys have split into four events across the year with two of them focused on mountain bike, two of them focused on road and gravel, and a much smaller collection of brands at each, which makes it entirely manageable by one person, I think. Some media outlets may beg to differ.
yeah.
But yeah, the cost to frame it thing from a, so I literally came to your event this year. We're recording this in, I say Andolo, where are we in Italy?
We are in Andolo.
Okay. It's beautiful too. Thank you. I came to this event from a single brand launch in a different part of Italy where they had brought in, I think, 27 journalists, paid for everybody's flights, paid for everybody's hotels. And this is one brand covering all of these costs for all of the meals for everything, which I'm sure was massively expensive. And here you're defraying this costs. At this one, we have 9 brands, this or 10, right?
10 brands.
Yeah, 10 correct. Brands. So, and how many journalists are you bringing in this year or for this one?
15 publications and a total of 19 editors from most of the markets of reference of Europe and North America.
Right on. And so, yeah, take that cost of bringing all those editors in and divide it by 10, right? And yeah, it gets a lot lower real quick. It makes something like this, where you get this one-on-one time with the media, a lot more feasible for maybe small and mid-sized brands or even big brands that are just, you know, budget conscious.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you say, it doesn't necessarily depend on the size of the brand, but it could be a brand that just believes in the format. And we've had, luckily enough, instances where even the bigger brands just realized the validity of the format. And for them, it was, spending less money on something that worked for them as a product launch platform that can guarantee to them the same results that they would have gotten if they ran it themselves. And of course, there is a lot more money involved in running a product launch directly in the HQs, or, I mean, directly for a brand. But there is a ton of back office work that we also immediately remove from their man hours, because they find everything organized up front. So all they have to do is basically show up with the product and
sign a check to you, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the fee they pay is very reasonable at the end of the day for what they get, because they literally have to think about nothing but bring the product and the story to tell, and they go through the program and that's it. So,
right. Yeah. I remember when you guys first started, I think I talked to you a little bit about this concept when you were just considering. Actually, I remember it was the Formula booth at Eurobike over cocktails and nice snacks. And you were telling me what you were coming up with. And I thought, man, this is great, because I loved Press Camp as an editor. It was great to be able to go to this one place and see so many brands. So it was a really efficient use of our time as well. And a lot of media appreciate that, because what is crazy to me is that, you know, more and more I think media are actually turning down trips when it's a single brand if it pulls them out of the office for even 3 or 4 days, which to me it's a perk, right? Like getting to go somewhere awesome and ride awesome bikes is a perk of the job, but a lot of people just don't see it that way, or they're too busy. And so this makes a really good use of our time too. But back to when you were talking about the concept, and over the first couple of years of this, I remember seeing you guys walking around Eurobike and Seattle and pounding the pavement, talking to every brand, trying to get them to understand the concept and then trying to get them to commit to it. And what were like those first couple of years of getting brands on board? What was that like? Like, how did you start to get your first brands to commit? How did you convince them?
Well, we, like you say, we did a lot of prospection that was mostly based on one-on-one meetings with brands or you know, marketing managers and people who were relevant inside of brands to actually spread the word and explain the format. And it wasn't super easy at the beginning because the most common answer was, yeah, but where do we get the exclusivity? Where do we get our own the feeling of, you know, bringing a journalist in our own house and making it feel like it's our brand? And it was funny because we were literally receiving this type of answers in a trade show where you had 1,000 exhibitors and they were showing up and, you know, and believing that it was the right thing to do. So that's what happened a lot. But slowly but surely, brands understood that it's not about sharing the space and the time with other brands that are not even necessarily competitors, because we don't have only one product category. Of course, it caters to all categories. But it's about, you know, having the quality time with the media. And, you know, the format is structured in a way where all the meetings are really private and you can do your one-on-ones without even having to show any product to people you don't want to. You can have embargoes signed. It can be very, you know, smooth and private. But at the end of the day, it doesn't even, that's not even the focal point of the event, because it's such an intimate event where you have 50, 60 people max in a hotel. And it's just about the quality time that you get with the press that you wouldn't get elsewhere, and the writing, of course. The writing and the testing is a big part of it, and let's not forget the social part. I mean, you eat and drink, and it's good fun as well. So
yeah, I think from a U.S. brand standpoint too, this is one of the few events where you can have that opportunity to really get to know the European media. Because walking around a trade show, everyone's pretty rushed. You don't really sit and hang out until the party at the end where it's just a, you know, mayhem. So here it's like for US brands in particular to send people over and get to know the editors of, you know, the rest of the world, where almost everybody's a global company now in terms of where they sell their products. So that's, I think, probably very beneficial.
Well, it works both ways, really. I think it's also beneficial for North American based publications, and I mean, let's face it, that North American based publications, unless they cater to a very specific geographical market, they are a global publication because they're in English. But I think it works both ways, and it also works wonders for brands that are really strong traditionally in one market, like the UK or Italy or France. But as you said, like they're global brands in terms of sales, so they can sell everywhere. They just need that energy, that platform to make their product and their message known all over the place. And we're luckily, we can provide it, and probably to do so on their own means would be a bit beyond you know, the immediate result, but ultimately, like, we've had very, very local brands that use our platform to become global brands, to meet media. And It's great. Like, one of the biggest satisfactions for us is when, like, a journalist comes to us and says, "Oh, those guys from, you know, brand XY were so cool. I'd never met them, and I'm really glad I got to meet them because I got such a cool story." And vice versa, where, you know, there is a brand that meets a journalist or a content creator, because we work with a lot of content creators now, YouTubers and even podcasters. And they go like, "Well, we've started it, and, you know, a new project with them," and that is one of the great byproducts of our events, for sure.
Yeah, let's talk about the different types of media. You know, as you call them, content creators, which is probably more apropos nowadays, because we were talking about that earlier, and how it was a bit of a gamble for you to start bringing a podcaster or two, you know, 1 year, and then it was a little bit of a gamble to bring kind of like this one guy who's an Italian YouTuber who is kind of an unknown element on YouTube. the first year, but what was the, like, how did you pick and choose those different media types and the people, and then what was the reaction from the brands to...
You know, at the beginning, the media selection was kind of straightforward and easy. I would say that even 5 years ago when we started, the word was very different than what it is now. And I don't mean just the word in as a whole, but the mountain biking industry. Like, it was dominated by more established online media, whereas now in the past, you know, few years, and I would say especially with COVID, we've seen a rise in independent content creators that work on platforms like YouTube or even podcasts that are doing a really good job, and by numbers and by interest and by influence are challenging the more established platforms. I'm not even considering print, but online platforms. So we started working with YouTubers. We've seen a opportunity in YouTubers back in 2019, and we brought the first guy, actually Daniel, whose channel Daniel Reyes from Spain was already quite established, and we just saw a huge opportunity in his numbers. I mean, Spanish is probably one of the five most common languages on the planet, so we said, well, let's bring him in, and then we just saw him growing exponentially. Of course, you know, some brands, they seize the opportunity and they immediately start, you know, doing, they buy in and they do cool content. Other brands are a bit more, they're a bit thrown off balance by the approach, which is usually way more conversational, way less technical. I mean, let's face it, this independent content creators, they play by the rules of the game way less. And usually... well, not usually, but sometimes they're from outside the bike industry, so they don't necessarily have that network of connections that most of us, meaning like people in the bike industry, share. So they are a little bit of outsiders. But
and a lot of times they're very the reason people like them and follow their channels is because they're very personality driven, right? So it's as much you're following that creator because you like their personality, their sense of humor, maybe even their style. As much as the actual content itself.
Exactly. Like, their characters. And that's what we like about them, is that their storytelling is very experience-based rather than product-based. So they make very compelling content, even just about the event itself. And they make the Bike Connection event itself a piece of news. Like, they show their viewers, hey, look where we got invited. Look how cool this is. Like, we got all these brands and all this new product we can show you. We can or cannot show you, because sometimes they come here and they want to do a daily vlog, but then they ride free bikes and two of them are embargoed for the next, you know, 2 months. So sometimes it's also hard for them to produce content they can put out right away. But most of the time they're really successful and they work well with brands. And this winter, 2022, we also experimented with podcasters. And that was even a harder challenge, because how do you, you know, translate such a visual experience as trying a new bike into audio storytelling? But, for example, Stefano Nucera from the Broom Wagon came to our Road and Gravel event, and he did a great job. Basically, he found a cool story hook with each brand, so he made each brand tell a story. And then obviously they were talking about product, but his goal was tell me a story, and that he was really successful in doing that. And his series of shows about Bike Connection are really entertaining. Like, they're really fun to listen to.
Very cool. So do you coach the brands at all? Like, give them a heads up of who's coming? And for some of these alternative formats, is that part of the service, or could it be, should it be, you know, like saying, hey, you know, this guy's going to probably want to do something like this. And like, show them how? Because I say this because we were talking earlier, and some people just, they're gonna go through their presentation whether you like it or not. And I've literally sat in some of those where I had already seen the new product, I'd already ridden it, knew all about it, and they're like, okay, great, well, here's our presentation. Then like 30 minutes later, you're like, I knew all that, now let's show me something new, right?
Well, we Well, what we do is we like to say we provide a platform. And since one of the unique features of our events is that each company gets a fully private meeting with each journalist or content creator, as Julio said earlier, that for us is the whole key behind, you know, how you build your story. Basically, you know, if you're in front of a YouTuber, maybe use that hour meeting slot to do a video. If it's a podcaster, you record an episode like we're doing now. If it's just a traditional journalist that has never seen your product, you introduce the brand. Or if it's somebody that you have a really tight relationship with, you talk about whatever, soccer, cool rides you've done at home, the best beer you had lately at your local brewery. I mean, it's relationship building time, but face-to-face time, it's hard to get, especially hard to get nowadays. It has been impossible in the past couple of years. So it's the brand's time. It's precious. They should use it accordingly.
Yeah, I guess we like to tell the brands to pass the message that we set the stage. That is a very high quality stage where they have all the tools to get their message across. And they can do it in whatever way they want. They can talk about their brand history. They can talk about a specific product. They can go as tech as they want, or they can be just social with the editors. But like you say, when it comes to showing something new and interesting for the media, which is also one of the goals of the event, to be a little bit of a, you know, of a special time for brands to present something that adds something, that not only adds something to their story, but also adds something to the Bike Connection event per se. We like to try and have brands that have to present something new at Bike Connection. So because that adds value to everyone. Not necessarily something new, like the hottest new day product they have, but for sure something that is that hasn't been tested, maybe has been only presented digitally but hasn't been seen directly by the media yet. So we like to have that element of newness that for sure makes the editors feel more compelled to come and spread the word that it was being at Bike Connection was worthwhile.
Yeah, I guess that's an important part of it, right? Is like if the media come and they're just not seeing enough new to justify the time and trip, then it's either they're going to come for a vacation or they're just not going to come at all.
Which
right?
is a great vacation, by yeah, the way. Absolutely. We could tell.
Well, you said at the beginning that you're a marketing consulting agency. And from my standpoint as a media outlet that comes to cover the new products, the only part of it I see are these press camps. What's the other sides of the business? Like, what else do you do for brands or tourism agencies?
Well, so the one thing we like, and again, I got to credit Julio with it, is, we like to...
Clearly, he's the brains behind this, right?
Absolutely.
That's why I'm silent.
Just keep talking, buddy.
And I'm the face, and you could argue with the choice, but that's what we have. No, Julio has always been pretty vocal in saying that we should only, communicate outwardly, the things that we do, like the results. And so we've always tried to, keep our heads down, work rather than spend a lot of time, boasting and claiming about who we work with and what we do. So we like to have the work we do for our clients speak for itself. But basically, what we've been doing since the beginning was selecting very specific brands or entities that we could help grow through strategic consultancy. So we've done work with a few brands and we've done things from, just a comprehensive marketing management. Basically, we work with brands like Uno Bikes from Barcelona, where we just basically we were their outsourced marketing department. So we did everything from, website management to PR management, content creation, and social media management and so forth. But for example, we also work with races or tourism entities. So we helped launch Apenninica stage race, which is kind of becoming the Italian Cape Epic. It's a big cross-country marathon stage race through the Apennines. We work with Il Cicalino, which is one of the major tourist bike resort in Massa Marittima, in the Massa Marittima region, where we hold three of our events every year. So we help them with all their bike-related marketing, which includes PR, social media, but also partnership management. So we help them find suitable partners for them to be appealing in their offering as a bike destination.
Cool. What, I know you guys don't want to talk specific numbers in terms of revenue and sales and what you charge for things, but from a percentage revenue standpoint, what percentage is the press camps and what percentage is other?
Well, we like to focus on our events as much as possible, because that's for sure it's a good part of our revenue. It's where we can express ourselves more freely. We basically don't have to answer, any client, because we are the creators of the platform, the providers of the platform. And therefore, every decision is up to us. It's one of the main reasons why we tend to do that, and then a byproduct of that is also that the bigger part of the income comes from the event platform, and it's four events in the year on the calendar. So it's, you know, it sounds only 4 weeks per year, it can sound like a little time, but there's a very long preparation behind it. There's scouting for location. There is, of course, the prospection, media invitation, and all the logistics, and the on-site operational stuff. So it takes quite a bit of a bandwidth to work on the events as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, the time, because, first of all, so back to just the percentage of revenue.
Yeah, sorry.
Is it, would you say like 70-30, 50-50?
I would say ballpark, and I'm not the numbers guy, so it's easy for me to say
this.
So
he can say what he wants.
So I can say what he wants. I'm the marketing guy. I would say it's like 60 to 70 events and 30 to 40 marketing consultancy and like one-off projects, depending on the year and how many events. It's also worth noticing that due to COVID, we haven't been able to pull a full season of like a full year of events since 2019. Like we were forced to make some pretty substantial changes in the calendar to adapt to the to what was possible to do. And actually, we were really lucky as, an agency that relies on events as one of its main sources of revenue to be able to organize events even in 2020. So we did one event right before COVID started, but we were also able to do two in September 2020. And this is a big testament to the flexibility, but also to the sustainability of our event. Like we don't move an insane number of persons. We don't rely on crazy logistics. We are very adaptable. We can run in a very agile way, to borrow a term.
And you get, because it's just the two of you that are full time, like salaried presumably. And everybody else you use for the events are kind of contractors that just sort of come on site, work the event, and then they're off.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, so that's pretty lean. It must make it easy. I guess, I'm guessing here, correct me if I'm wrong, that the being able to do that other marketing stuff probably helped sustain you through those lean years of COVID, right? When you couldn't do so many events?
We got quite lucky in 2020 when all hell broke loose. We had just had an event where when it was the end of February when everything was starting to get shaky around the world. But initially, as people may remember, that it seemed like an Italian thing, at least in Europe. It seemed to be, you know, the point where everything was spreading. So, and we were holding an event in Tuscany, Italy. So, well, we just made it just right before everything went in the way it went, and we got locked down and everything. But then we found another window in 2020 in September where we could do a combo, an event combo. So we did here in Andalo a road and a mountain bike event back to back. So in the end, it was three events out of four in 2020. So, and we were super pleased with that. I mean, we were not even expecting it. When we were talking about it in April, it seemed impossible. But then in the end, it was three out of four. So great. 2021 was a little bit more difficult because the regulations came up, and all the regulations in the European countries were different. So one country wasn't accepting another, but was only accepting certain ways. And it was a little bit of a mess, and that pushed the first events of the year back and back and back. So we ended up doing one event, which was a little bit bigger than a normal event, but it was one event. And so in that respect, it helps us, and it helped us for sure to have, the consultancy stuff going. But due to the nature of the event, as Simon was pointing out, that is kind of, manageable in a lot of ways. And it's very easy to move it from one location to another, one venue to another. It's very flexible. So that helped too.
So about the events, like, would you guys be able to sustain yourselves and do this without the consultancy side? If you just focused on just events, is that enough of a business?
Well, it really depends on the events, because it can range from, it really depends on how many brands attend and how many we manage to run successfully. But in theory, yes, we could, also due to the fact that we're simple people and we don't expect to make
not driving Lambos
FU money, yeah. Someone would say, but yeah.
Well, it also, I think it helps that we, as I mentioned before, like we made some pretty smart choices. So we decided that we were going to build the company as it came along and not, start with a huge overhead on, an office and two, fully loaded VW vans and fancy stuff. No, we really started, like, it was pretty clear even from the first Eurobike that we attended, where, by the way, I was scared. Can I say curse words?
Whatever you want.
I was scared shitless, to go out and sell this new thing. But what we said, we said our product, our project is the number one thing. Like, it doesn't matter who we are. It doesn't matter what we've done in the past. Obviously, our previous roles helped in terms of, contacts and people that we knew and people that trusted us. But it was a completely new thing we were selling, and it was, the burden of proof was all on us. I would say that luckily, a lot of the journalists that we engaged, and especially the ones we engaged early, like yourself, they were all very enthusiastic. So it seems like when we started, there was definitely a need and a calling for this kind of event. I think we came into the market at the right moment, where there was an over proliferation of media events, and a lot of people were a little bit tired of having to fly halfway across the world to, test a tire or to see a new helmet. But at the same time, brands still wanted to have a platform to use to deliver that message in a personal way, and not just send the product over to the office.
Yeah, I think, and going back to the sustainability you were asking, like Simon said, probably it helped that we worked really hard when we were working for brands as employees. And we surely benefited from that a lot. But it was really clear from the start that what we wanted out of this business was a lifestyle, you know, a good lifestyle. So we really value our time and our spare time, especially. So we, of course, we still need to work hard and we still need to take the risk, you know, as a company, because we're basically every event is different from another. We don't know what brands will attend until they actually sign up. So
and even then, they may
even
not,
then
right?
they may cancel. I mean, especially lately, we've had a lot of problems with. I mean, the problems of the industry related to the product cycle reflected, of course, on the ability of the brands to attend. And so,
you're referring to supply chain, right? Like they wanted to show something off and they can't get it. I mean, that's happened like crazy this year. There was a launch I went to in early summer that was supposed to launch right about now. And now in September of 2022, just to timestamp this, and they're like, it's going to be like early 23 now.
Yeah. And that, of course, yeah. You know, so there's a lot of, the event format, like I said, is flexible, but we have to be very flexible as well and be ready to make decisions really quickly and take some risks. But at the end of the day, yeah, we're not asking to become disgustingly rich, and we haven't.
Yeah,
so it is the bike industry.
Yeah.
But on the same hand, it also really helps that we're just two, and that besides being business partners, we're also really, really good friends. And I'm not saying this, you know, just to tell a nice story. Like, this is the truth, and everyone who knows us knows this, that we're really good friends. And this also takes away a whole layer of, you know, having to be, you know, I would say even a whole layer of having to be ultra polite or ultra diplomatic. Like, we put things down to each other very bluntly, and sometimes it's not pretty, especially when we have diverging opinions. But that's what also helps us in taking decisions quicker, because we don't have to go, you know, we don't have to go through 15 meetings or, you know, 3 days long email chains. It's a Skype call, and or it's a meeting, it's a chat over dinner or over a beer. And yes, as I said, it can get ugly, because sometimes one of us has a very sad idea and the other guy has to talk him down. But then in the end, even when we had and when we have to make difficult decisions, it's most of the times decisions that we both really embrace. So that's great. We always, I would say, we have the luxury of always believing in what we do.
And for good and for bad, because it happened that we tried to embrace something we really didn't believe in totally, and it feels immediately shaky. Like, I mean, we're not moving in the same way with the same solidity that we are normally when we do the things we believe in. So it immediately, it feels at a gut level that maybe we're not moving on the right ground and we have to stop and rethink. And I think this is, again, due to the fact that knowing ourselves personally, other than professionally, we can go at a little bit deeper level than just, you know, rationalizing everything and, you know, bringing the numbers. And there's less diplomacy, and maybe we can be really direct and feel the situations. And that is great. I mean, not having, for me personally, having to work in a company environment where you have to face all the egos of the people and that are trying to prove themselves, no matter what the matter to be proven is.
Some may be scared of losing their job.
Yeah, or scared that something's going to be their fault, or they're going to be held responsible for stuff. Yeah, that to me adds so much complication, unnecessary complication, that I love doing what I'm doing. Maybe for the most part, for the fact that I don't have to face all that. I mean, so I love working with Simon for that. And I think that adds up to what we're doing in a way, like I was saying, it makes a lot of things more quick, and, you know, we can be concrete and practical about stuff sometimes in a very good way. Yeah,
I'm glad you guys brought that up, because that was one of those things I wanted to sort of start wrapping this up with, is the friendship, right? Like, you guys are clearly very good friends, and every time I'm around you, you're joking with each other, and it's even when, like, you know, something doesn't show up, or there's clearly a stressful situation. I mean, putting on an event can be very stressful, right? Flights get delayed. You have all these moving parts that you have to deal with. And, like, there's literally an airline strike starting tomorrow when some journalists are supposed to be flying in. So you're sorting details. And I've never seen either one of you lose your cool or lose your sense of humor. And that's really, really neat. Has there ever been a moment where you're, like, questioned your decision to go into this as friends? And presumably you would, like, how do you handle that? Because, like, you guys are very good friends, and I don't think you'd ever want the business to change that.
Yeah, I mean, I think each of us can answer for himself. And for myself, I can say I never questioned it, because I'm pretty sure that, and I've said this to Simon before, I could only do this in this very way, and this with Simon. I probably, if there wasn't Simon, I couldn't do this. So, yeah. So I think Simon made it possible, because myself alone, no, I don't see myself doing all of this alone. And not only he made it possible, but it's also the only way that it's possible for me to, you know, to move through the things that we have to do with him. Otherwise, it would be very much different. So, and that's because of the way that I know him personally and professionally. So,
yeah, I'm about to shed a tear here, but it's the same for me. And I think, you know, we're human beings, and our friendship makes certain things incredibly easier. It also makes certain things harder, because, of course, as friends, sometimes it's harder to tell each other when things are not working out, or when we have a difficult moment, and we, you know, we end up spending a ton of time together and traveling together. And on the one hand, that is great, because I'm always hanging out with one of my best buddies. So it's never, you know, it's not, never like, oh, another boring work trip. No, it's always, oh, great, what are we doing? Where are we going?
But you live in different towns too.
We, like, do. We do.
Really far enough that you're not seeing each other every day. So does that help that you have that separation kind of for a good part of the year as well?
I would say that our differences, both personally and professionally, are what make us such a great team. Like, I would say we definitely don't think too much alike. We have the same goals, and we have the same, you know, we share the same vision, but it's probably the sum of our two personalities. And I totally agree with Julio that we couldn't have the same result in, you know, taking away one half of the company. Like, we are who we are, and we operate successfully on our standards as a lifestyle business, as Julio said, because of who we are and how we, you know, dampen each other enthusiasm on certain things, on how we push each other, literally. Yeah. And you know, you can see the traits, but the great thing I would say, and this is, I'm really grateful to Julio, what you said, like, we never look stressed. We are stressed, and we've experienced some.
He's more stressed than I am. That's where our personalities compensate very well.
But then that's where the priceless thing of having, you know, a friend that says, come on, let's have a beer. Yeah. Like, we'll sort
this
out.
You probably play off each other, right? Like, if you see the other stressed, you kind of, maybe you hide it a little on your side.
Yeah, actually, I want to rephrase that. It's not like that he's more stressed than I am, but we have areas where our levels of stress are exactly the opposite. So if he's stressed, I'm not stressed, and vice versa. And it's incredibly true that we're very different personalities, and you know.
Well, you have different roles, right? Like seems like you're more the business manager, Simon's more the marketing. So then do you have to?
Yeah, because I hide from people. So I'm comfortable hiding from people, and he's not. He's a great entertainer. And
so how much does just like, I mean, obviously as friends, you trust each other, but like as business partners, you have to trust too. Like, do you just, you have a meeting, say, okay, here's our direction, then do you just trust Simon to go and do the marketing things that need to be done? Or are you guys, like, are you wanting to see, like, well, hold on, tell me everything you're
blind
doing.
Blind 100%.
We play it by ear.
And,
right.
and
by ear
blind 100% trust. Like, we know that we are a great team, but also each of us represents the interest of the agency 100%. So there have been instances where, you know, we had a, you know, one of us was sick or had a medical, a family emergency. And so the other one was left, you know, quote unquote, alone. And we never, like, 1 second, like, doubted about the other guy's decision. It was just like, we are very much in that sense, in the level of trust, interchangeable. And there is absolute, like, 100% trust. Like, we got each other's back all the time, most of the time. And we check on each other a lot. Like, well, we check, well, I would say with each other. We're like, hey, I'm about to do this. Are you okay with it? And the answer 99.9% of the time is absolutely go for it. Like, we know each person has a very strong thought process on everything we do. So we rarely have to, like, do a, you know, strong, like, jab correction, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but no, I haven't. I think we don't even realize this, I think, like, on a daily basis, but it's good to have this interview, because sometimes it brings up things that you don't even think so much about. It's that you don't have to claim your discretion to do something. You know, when you work in a group of people, sometimes it's about you need to assert that it's your remit to do something and it's your decision, because other people will not naturally, spontaneously accept it. And, you know, that happens a lot in groups of, you know, in companies or in work groups in general. And we just don't have that. So it's just, you know, sharing, just letting someone know what you're doing. You don't have to,
Justify it.
Yeah, you don't have to add any element of, justification or
It's got to be very, very liberating, right?
You're
trusted to do what you're supposed to do. I think that's, honestly, like, you see it, or at least I see it more in, like, lower wage service industry jobs where the employees are not empowered to make any decisions on their own, and therefore they don't do anything to better the business and create a better experience for the customers. Whereas, you know, here, I just imagine if one of you is off and a brand comes with a question, you're just going to deal with it. I don't want to belabor that point. I love what you guys had to say. I did have one more question on the event side of it, as far as, you know, I always try and think about somebody listening is interested in this because maybe they're looking at a similar concept for their own business model. And so the one thing I want to ask is, you know, you've put on events throughout Italy, and you've had some in Girona, Spain, for a little bit, and you've recently decided to not go back to Girona, keep them all in Italy. And now it seems like you're really, 3 of the 4 events are in Massa Marittima, and 1 is here in Nondolo. It seems like the logistical effort required to keep putting on these events is going to get smaller and smaller as you find the places that you really like and the people to work with in each of these towns. So as that happens, does that free you up to potentially do another one, or, like, free you up to just have more free time throughout the year?
I mean, it's not a secret that the prospection work for an event, like the setting up the first time, is one of the most taxing things we can do. So definitely repeating the event in a certain location gives us a higher margin, and it gives us a better way to work, because we also rely on a pretty vast network of providers. So we have our our team, our regular team, which is our media crew and our event coordinator. But then we also have, the resort itself. And then there are either, the lift company or the riding guides and the shuttles. And then there is the airport shuttles. And then there is the security guy that comes in at night to overlook the demo setup. So these are all, the more we can trust each of these partners to do his or her job in a smooth way, the less stressful it becomes for us. Although, as Julio said, each event basically starts as an empty container. So we often face new challenges. For example, I can say that definitely now with the, energy prices and the situation right now, travel in general has become more complicated, more expensive. There are less flights. Airlines are erratic, to say the least, as you pointed before. We just communicated that one of the world's largest airlines is having a strike tomorrow, which is our big arrivals day. So you have to face a lot of these things. So it often varies, and it can be as not mundane as, airline strikes and delays. It can be different companies having, different needs, a brand wanting to manage an extremely long embargo. Like last winter and spring events, we basically, everything that was introduced at our mountain bike and road and gravel events was under embargo. And some products were under embargo for several months. And as you pointed out, they were even delayed. So I believe there is some stuff from our road spring event that hasn't come out yet. And that makes it pretty complicated because, you got to keep managing the information flow and, keep reminding people that the assets are there. They should use it when it's needed. So that's just one example of how each event can get complicated. So yes, in a way, having an established location and a trusted network of providers helps. But at the end of the day, each one is it's its own beast, and they're always demanding to organize.
All right, wrap this up with one quick question, but I want you each answer with your own thought on this. What has surprised you the most about running this business?
For me, this may or may not sound wrong to a lot of people. I forgot what it feels to work.
Why do you say that? Because you had a job before this.
Yeah.
Are you just slacking off?
No, exactly. I'm not slacking off. I realize I do a lot of stuff. We have to work really hard, especially in some periods of the year. But I feel like everything's so I'm not going to say that. Everything is so right that I only have to make so much effort as it's needed to do something. And when something is needed, I will make that effort spontaneously. I don't have to sit around and work or sit in front of the computer more than it's needed. I don't have to rush, and I don't have to wait for confirmations. I do what it's needed when it's needed. And for me, that doesn't feel like, the imprisonment of working.
You don't have that daily grind of just working for work's sake. So what in the world do you do all day? Like, what do you do with yourself? I think I'd feel lost. I find things to feel like work just so I'm sitting idle.
I have other passions. For me personally, one of my biggest passions is music. So I try to devote time to that as much as I can. I don't have a family, so I do my sports. Work. And, there's always,
Sounds fairly ideal.
Yeah, I don't try, I think this I can answer on behalf of both of us. We're not trying to push our business to, to look good or to be recognized out of the image, or we really want to work at the core. We want to provide a service, do something that works, And we're not trying to dress anything up. We're not, in other words, I like to say that we're not wasting any energy that is not necessary to get where we want to get.
That's awesome. That's actually a fantastic answer. And I think, I mean, it's inspirational to me because I have actually been thinking about that a lot lately. It's like, because I have a million ideas and I've always too often made the mistake of trying to pursue all of them, even for a little while. Just sometimes it's just for fun, just learn something new or like see what works or what doesn't. But lately I've realized that, yeah, like I think I'd rather just like watch a movie with the kids or, you know, yeah, go ride my bike once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you? I don't know how you're going to follow that, but.
Well, yeah, it's very hard to top that. But to me, it was really, you know, gaining a lot of trust in myself and ourselves as individuals and as what we do. I felt pretty strong and pretty comfortable in my previous position, and it's obviously, it's great to work for a big company. It's a very fulfilling experience, and it's very you get a ton of, you know, experience, and you grow really quickly, but you also find your limits and your boundaries. And when you get to a certain point in certain functions, there is only so much room to grow. And instead, I feel that doing this, I stepped through a major boundary in my comfort zone. Like I wasn't feeling okay about leaving a salary and a company credit card and, you know, just one of the biggest corporations in the bike industry as RAM is, and going completely on my own and being unrecognizable and not having a brand behind myself. And I'm not ashamed of saying this. And, but you know, the Julio convinced me, and it was so great to see how much we could do and achieve. And as you say, like we were literally pounding the pavement at Eurobike, like going from one booth to the other and meeting people. And we still do. Like it's super intense, but it's great when we start meetings now and people begin by saying, yeah, we know your format. And it may not be right for everyone. And, you know, it's the same with products really, but I'm finding this experience incredibly educational. Like at one point when I stopped working for SRAM, I was almost thinking about going back to school because I have a communications and marketing background, and I was thinking about doing an MBA. I was thinking about maybe trying to get into product management, but then I decided to invest my time in this, and it has been an incredibly rewarding experience and incredibly educational. So probably for me, I'm not saying for anybody, for everybody, but for me, it was probably better than going back to school.
Yeah, learn by doing. That's, I mean, hands-on, right?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much. This was, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This was about a million times better than the first time we tried doing this.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you. When you said you were going to shed a tear, I said it's probably sweat. So we're actually like sitting in Julia's a very small car. The windows are completely steamed, but we needed somewhere with good acoustics, and this worked out really, really well. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
Hey, thanks a ton for listening. In the spirit of work-life balance, you may notice I upload new episodes here very sporadically. When I find a great guest or an interesting business idea or story, I'll share it. If you like them, stay subscribed and you'll get a fresh interview now and then. If you really like it, share this with a fellow builder and tell your friends. Thanks, and here's hoping you're finding the balance you need. Life is short. Make the most of it. Until next time, keep building.